Today, can Democrats win back the trust of enough white working class voters in places like Ohio, once a swing state that was comfortably won by Donald Trump? The race for the White House is now in its final days. Campaign resources and reporters like The Guardian's Oliver Lockland are pouring into the battleground states that usually decide the election.
So Ohio is a pivotal swing state in the Midwest, and I went to Youngstown, which is the largest city in the Mahoning Valley region. Youngstown is Democrat, but Mahoning Valley as a region is one of those areas that flipped from Democrat control to Republican in 2016. I'd never been to Youngstown. I obviously know what I think a lot of people know it for. It's historically been a city that's associated with the automotive industry, with blue-collar jobs, manufacturing jobs, a town that was once prosperous, and I guess it's kind of slowly declined over the past few decades as manufacturing jobs have left the country.
What did you make of it? Tell me about Youngstown. What was it like?
It felt very, very empty. That was the thing that struck me straight away. You know, you go to a lot of these cities in the Rust Belt, which I have done over the past few years, and you kind of get a similar sense of decay. So there are a lot of abandoned old warehouses, old factories, that sort of thing, and just a kind of empty street. So we were staying in a hotel that was right in the downtown area. And I remember just getting in there and talking to Tom, who's the filmmaker I'm working with, and saying, this feels a bit like a ghost town.
For many years, Ohio was seen as a classic bellwether state. In fact, the Republicans have never won the presidency without it. It's also usually a tightly fought race. But in 2016, something seemed to shift. White working class voters didn't just tip away from the Democrats. They left the party in droves, turning Ohio from purple to red, meaning Donald Trump won with a comfortable 8-point lead. And yet, just 4 years on, the state appears to be once again too close to call. From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, is Ohio a swing state once again? John Russo, you're an academic who lived for more than 30 years in this city deep in Ohio, Youngstown. You taught at the local university. And it's an iconic city, really. Bruce Springsteen has written lyrics about it. Reporters always descend on it during elections. You still spend months there every year. Tell me about it.
I came to Youngstown in 1980, right in the middle of deindustrialization. Traditionally, it was very prosperous. I mean, for example, Youngstown had two symphony orchestras for most of the 20th century. It has an amazing art museum. And the people who started the steel mills, they gave back to their community. They were part of this community. And only when they were taken over by larger corporations, you saw culturally a decline also. And in 2000, my wife and I, Sherry Lincoln, wrote a book called Steeltown USA, Work and Memory in Youngstown. We argued that ultimately Youngstown's story was America's story in the 20th century.
So what is the story of Youngstown?
Well, the story of Youngstown is that the deindustrialization, the economic decline, the breakup of the community into various factions, culturally, it's the loss of sense of place. All those have contributed to what's happening in America. And in fact, you can see it now in terms of American politics.
And I know you've argued that if Youngstown's story in the 20th century reflects America's story, it may well do so again in the 21st century. And with that, you predicted Trump would take Ohio before any polls suggested that was going to happen. You saw that very clearly in 2016. Why did you think he was going to win?
Well, I think the major theme was the politics of resentment. the resentment that happened within the community, the breakup of the community, the kids leaving the community, the economic decline, the poverty, the loss of values in their homes, and just a general sense that Youngstown suddenly thought of itself as a loser when historically it had been the major part of industrial development of America through large parts of the 20th century.
And what was it that Trump kind of played into there?
Well, Trump promised everything. He promised that the steel mills would come back. He promised that the world would be better. He told the people in the community not to sell their houses and everything's going to get better.
I was looking at some of those big, once incredible job-producing factories, and my wife, Melania, said, "What happened?" I said, "Those jobs have left Ohio. They're all coming back. They're all coming back. Coming back. Don't move. Don't sell your house. Don't sell your house."
Remember, and I've read you call Youngstown ground zero for Trump support. Why do you say that?
Well, that wasn't my term. It was a term that was developed by reporters who were coming to Youngstown during the 2016 campaign. And they found all this sudden support for the president. And everybody was sort of shocked. I think the Democratic Party was shocked. I think they had a different idea of how they were going to win the election, that they wouldn't need the working class. And they forget that Ohio, about 60% of the voters are white working class. And in fact, they got beat by 8 points, which is unbelievable for the state of Ohio. Ohio is not a red state. It was never a red state. It's a purple state. And I think in 2020, you're going to see that again.
Ollie, why did you decide to go to Youngstown?
So Donald Trump, after he won the election in 2016, one of the first campaign stops he made was to Youngstown, where he made very direct promises to the people of that city to revive the economy, to bring back jobs. And so I don't know if I really had an expectation, but what I wanted to try and do was to figure out whether he delivered on those promises.
Were you able to tell? Has he delivered on them?
I think categorically the answer is no. You know, just looking at the latest poverty numbers that have come out from the US Census Bureau for the last year, you know, Youngstown now has the second highest rate of child poverty in the United States. We can talk about, you know, a once great GM Motors factory that was just on the outskirts of Youngstown in a village called Lordstown that closed down last year, taking thousands of jobs with it. And so really, when you look at the direct promises he's made, it's pretty clear to me that they haven't been fulfilled.
If that is the economic picture, presumably we would expect it to have an impact on voters. How did you go about trying to measure the political temperature in the city?
So it's quite difficult in the pandemic trying to find kind of organised political events. And we just sort of turned up at early voting lines and canvassed opinion there. So there were a lot of people who we spoke to who gave us some really evocative and quite devastating descriptions of what had happened to Youngstown over the past 4 years.
Do you think Donald Trump has delivered for this city? Why not?
No other city.
Has this area changed over the past 4 years?
Yes. No jobs.
People who are invested in the market have done quite well. The people who work for a living have not done that well.
We don't have enough jobs to keep our young people. They have to take their education and they have to go somewhere else.
He promised to bring back manufacturing jobs to this state. What do you make of that?
He promised, but he didn't.
One guy who, when I said to him, what's changed here over the past 4 years, he told me to close my eyes.
Close your eyes. That's what changed. Nothing.
So yeah, that was a really interesting place to meet voters. We went to some Republican Party events. So there was a flag waving event that was happening by a roadside just outside of Youngstown, and went and spoke to people there. And there as well, I was quite surprised to talk to people who, despite being very staunch Donald Trump supporters, were quite candid about the fact that, you know, the president had made very direct promises to them and he hadn't completely delivered, didn't stop them wanting to vote for him. But they were aware that, you know, the promises of economic rejuvenation that Donald Trump made for this region had not been completely delivered on.
Yeah, but they were at a Trump rally. So, as you say, they were very much planning to vote for him. What was the event like? And did you understand why they remained so staunchly supportive of the president?
So this is, as many Donald Trump flag-waving rallies are, a pretty colourful, crowd participatory event.
Donald Trump promised he would revive manufacturing in this area. Do you think he's done that?
I think he's on the path.
He had, you know, very large flags. There was a guy on stilts dressed as Uncle Sam.
Dressed as Uncle Sam.
Yeah, very, very enthusiastic Trump supporter. So aside from talking about Donald Trump's personality and the kind of, you know, cult-like obsession there is with Trump as a president amongst conservatives, people were also pointing to pretty new developments that have happened in the Youngstown, Lordstown area.
I don't think it's 100%, but he's working harder than anyone.
So that GM plant that I mentioned that had closed down has since been bought out by a start-up electric truck company called Lordstown Motors. And there are promises that they are going to be bringing in new jobs there. So the promise at the moment, I think, is about 600 new jobs next year, which is obviously nowhere near the same number of jobs that used to be at that plant. But it is something, and people pointed to that as an example of what Donald Trump has started to do in that region. So I want to be, you know, fair to people. It's not like decline and decay. It's a mixture, I think, but it's a downward trend. That's what I would say.
He can do better. He can do better. He can do everything. He can do everything, but he's working on it.
We are a depressed area in Ohio. We are a depressed area within Ohio. He's got a plateful when he has to work with us.
He has done so much for middle-class Americans, and you cannot blame him for the communist China virus.
As well as pointing to, you know, these new businesses that are coming into town, that sort of development, people were also kind of trying to blame people who were out of work. So that's a kind of common thing that you hear a lot of the time when you ask about Trump's record on the economy. People will say there are jobs out there, but people don't want to work. So I heard that a lot as well.
Were there tensions at this rally?
So for the most part, it was a pretty jolly affair, I would say. They were getting a lot of toots as people were driving past. But then one truck pulled up. That had a handwritten Dump Trump sign on it. It was a red Chevy, and the mood turned very, very quickly.
You're a sick dude, man.
Really?
Why would my family split up?
You know what could have happened? You know what could have happened? Trump could have signed executive order and stopped the offshoring of GM, Harley Davidson, Honeywell, Carrier, AT&T, and the list goes on and on and on and on.
And it turned out that the guy who was driving this truck is quite a well-known protester. He's a former worker at that plant I mentioned, and his name is Chucky Dennison. He's a big Bernie Sanders supporter, and he went past trying to disrupt this event, basically, and jumped out of his car and immediately got into a bit of an altercation with some of the people who were there. He was swarmed on by a group of the Trump supporters. He got wrapped up in a Trump flag as he was sort of shouting.
Who is this guy, Chucky?
Chucky is actually a pretty well-known voice in Youngstown, and his story is a very compelling one. You know, he used to work at that GM plant in Lordstown.
So I was at my second plant down in Shreveport, Louisiana, and I got a transfer letter when they were closing that plant to come here to Lordstown. That's where I met Cheryl, my partner, who's in Spring Hill, Tennessee now.
Did she lose her job when that plant closed down?
Yeah, she got her transfer to Tennessee, and luckily she got that transfer because if she would have lost her health care, which she was really close to losing, we would have over $500,000 in medical debt right now.
So he is now having a long-distance relationship with his fiancée where he's essentially commuting to Tennessee once every few months to go and see her. And so we tracked him down and wanted to hear more about why he turned up there.
So just tell me a bit about why you were there yesterday. One of the things that surprised me the most was there was a guy there who said that he also worked in the same plant as you and was a union guy too. Were you surprised to see people like that at a rally supporting Donald Trump?
This time around, yeah, very, very surprising. Even all the insane rhetoric that he spewed during the primaries, what he did talk about was holding corporations responsible for offshoring jobs, and he failed at that. That's why we so strongly want to hold him accountable, because those were his words, and that's how he got elected, through counties like this. And we'll be damned if he's going to get reelected through counties like this that have been taking a beating in the last 4 years.
So he said that, you know, he had turned up to try and make these people aware of Trump's broken promises. He thinks that people who continue to support Donald Trump in this region are misguided and have bought into false dreams that he pitched to the people here.
Obviously, the people Chucky confronted are the most vocal Trump supporters. They were at a Republican rally. Were you able to find others who also didn't blame the president for the economic shift?
After meeting up with Chucky, I went for a stroll around Lordstown. Lordstown is a super small, kind of almost village-like community. Basically, the GM plant is kind of the center of it, or was the center of it until it closed down. But we came across a house that was probably only a mile away from the GM plant that was kind of covered in Donald Trump banners.
Hi there, how you doing? I think I know who you're voting for.
So I've met a guy called Denny Wilson and his wife Deborah, who had lived in that area for decades and used to work at the plant. He had long since retired.
How are you guys doing during the Trump presidency?
Good. We haven't had any problems with anything.
He kind of promised to reinvigorate the economy here. Do you think he's delivered on that?
GM pulled out.
Yeah.
When GM pulled out, what can you do?
But Donald Trump said he was going to stop all that, right? He was talking about American jobs.
He was late. When he came in, it was already being done.
But he was devastated by the fact that it had closed. You know, he's still a paying union member. He has lots of friends who used to work there as well. And so I asked him what he thought about the closure, and he gave a wildly different interpretation of it to how Chucky described it.
What did he say?
Well, he basically pointed out, and I think this is a completely reasonable point, that the area had been in decline for a long time, that GM Motors had been considering shutting that plant down for a long time, that jobs had been gradually leaving in the first place, and that 4 years of Donald Trump was not enough to stop that from happening.
And I guess the sentiment you're hearing there is a sentiment that probably exists in many parts of Youngstown and more broadly in Ohio, which is that industrial decline that had happened before 2016 was felt to be more at the hands of the Democrats. And so people turned to Trump because they thought that he was on their side. Beyond Denny, were you able to find other people who, despite what had happened locally, were still going to vote for Trump? And if so, why were they not frustrated by the lack of economic progress?
So yeah, it was a common thing that you come into contact with people who are saying they're voting Trump. They say that this is not a decline that started under Donald Trump. They blame Barack Obama. They say that 8 years of Obama didn't bring us no jobs here. And so yeah, it's kind of a common refrain. I mean, I guess the thing that I kept on coming back to when I was trying to speak to people was that may be true, and it is true, but Donald Trump promised to change things here and he did not deliver. But people didn't seem that bothered.
And so, therefore, overall, was the mood you were getting one in which the president, who did pretty well in 2016, he had an 8-point lead in Ohio, should be quite confident?
It's really, really difficult to say. I think the latest polling that I've looked at puts Ohio very, very, very close. And I think there's no doubt that Joe Biden, who has touted, you know, bringing back union jobs to these communities with green energy jobs and so forth, is cutting through with some voters, but I suspect that Ohio is going to be very close.
Coming up, John Russo tells us why he thinks Ohio is going to be very competitive in 2020. John, our reporter Ollie Lotland found a real mixed bag in Youngstown. A consensus around economic trouble for the city and its surrounding areas, but a deep divide over who is to blame for that. Earlier, you teased us by arguing that the state would be purple once again in this election. Why do you think that?
Well, in the piece that I wrote for the American Prospect, what I did is that I looked at basic demographic information of what was happening in the state. And I found out that it was becoming less a white working class state. That is, the white working class was declining in numbers by 2 to 3%. More people were being educated. Younger people, people of color, were coming into the state. And then once I sort of established what was happening in the demographic changes, I wanted to find out other key groups that were important to Trump's re-election. And so I started to look at the evangelical community, and I started to make some phone calls. I just was trying to get a sense of what was happening in the evangelical community. And I found a good bit of discomfort, even though evangelicals and Catholics got a lot of the things that they wanted from Trump, especially around abortion. Yet there was a discomfort. They were talking also about their kids. Their kids weren't going to church. And I suspect that part of that was because of the hypocrisy that they were seeing in their parents. In one hand, supporting Trump, somebody who obviously didn't have Christian morals or values. I then started to look at the schisms within the Ohio Republican Party itself. The schisms were deep. And you can hear that discussion, even though the more moderates were co-conspirators in many ways to what Trump was doing. Now, in the last 2 weeks, you're starting to see them inch away.
But in economic terms, which was one of the big drivers, presumably, of what happened in 2016, do the people who you've written about over many years in a city like Youngstown feel that Trump has delivered for them? Do they feel economically different to how they felt in 2016?
In a word, no. I talked to people and I could see that they were discouraged. They were not getting the things that they thought they were. They thought the president was a con man. You had one of the major hospitals in Youngstown close. You had the newspaper closing. You had the Lordstown GM plant shutting down. He just didn't deliver. And a lot of them said that it was a con. They got conned by their own resentments. They resented the Democratic Party, and in many ways for good reasons. I just feel that in general, Trump has lost support both in the economically, culturally, sociologically, if you will. Either people are not going to vote for him this time or they won't vote at all because they're so fed up with both parties.
One thing that has definitely happened in these communities is, as you've said, deindustrialization, and is this sense of being let down by politics, and in particular, for many union members, the Democratic Party. What do you think Joe Biden has to do to reconnect with those voters, and do you think he's doing it?
I think it's a much broader question. In deindustrialized areas, and I'm sure my friends in the UK have experienced it too, there's been a lack of faith in institutions as a result of deindustrialization. I don't mean just government. I mean corporations, labor union, religious organizations, those traditional types of institutions that bring solidarity and community together. I don't know how you reconstruct that now. I think Joe Biden is going to try to do that. He's going to have to try to show that government can be a real helpful tool. I think other church organizations and labor unions, what's left of them, will play a minor role in that. Plus, I think there's still that good bit of racial resentment that transcends the white working class, and it's also middle class.
Tell me more about that. We think of the white working class as Trump's voting base, but you think that's a bit misleading, don't you?
Well, I think it's really an East Coast bias. I just believe that a lot of the reporters who come in and to Youngstown and do drive-bys and reporting on it really don't understand the sort of the undercurrent of racism. And also, it's easier to blame the working class than talk about middle-class racism. And I think you saw it in the 2016 election. A lot of people in the suburbs, white women, voted for Trump. And you hear in this campaign, Trump going in and talking about you, suburban women, you have to vote for me because I'm protecting your suburbs. And what's behind that, of course, is a type of racism. They're fearing that some horde of African-American people are going to come into the suburb. I think that history is going to go back and look at this election and see how it is uncovered the type of racism that is part of the United States' original sin, if you will.
You began by talking about resentment. And one of the things that we know that happened at the same time as deindustrialization was more of a focus on identity politics, more of a focus on women and on race. And that in itself is something that has bred resentment among some communities. I'm just interested in how you think Black Lives Matter and Trump's response to it affects votes in a place like Ohio.
I think it does, because it addresses an underlying sort of racism, whether it's institutional or individual. And I think that's another reason why this election is important. This election is not necessarily so much about Trump and Biden. It's a election about the American people and who they are and what they want and their values. You know, Ohio is full of good people. And we're going to see if that goodness, if you will, that shapes both religion and gender and race and ethnicity wins out versus the types of racial attitudes that are being put out by the Trump administration.
John Russo, who we've been talking to, Ollie, suggested that to some extent, Youngstown in the 20th century was symbolic of the story of America, and that Youngstown in the 21st century might be symbolic of that story once again. And that story overall, certainly in 2016, was a story of people feeling disillusioned with the Democratic Party and shifting towards Trump, who they felt would give them a voice, particularly white working class people. You have now travelled all over the US in the run-up to this election. Did you feel that this part of Ohio was somehow symbolic of what was going on across the country?
What I saw Youngstown, Ohio as a symbol of was the deep divisions that now exist in this country. People that you speak to, when you ask them very directly about the promises Donald Trump made here, do not seem to mind and do not blame the president for not delivering on his promises. Other people are furious about it and are going to try and vote him out of office. But the other thing that I noticed there was pervasive disinformation that was going on and a real lack of accountability. So Youngstown is now the largest metro area in America without a daily newspaper. Its daily newspaper, The Vindicator, closed last year. And there is really now nobody in the city, or very few people, who are holding local officials and federal officials accountable for the failures that have happened, not just over the past 4 years.
That was Ollie Lachland and John Russo. Do go to theguardian.com to watch Ollie's reporting in the brilliant Anywhere But Washington series, including his most recent film on Ohio, made with producers Tom Silverston and Noah Payne Frank. John Russo is an academic and author of Steeltown USA, Work and Memory in Youngstown, along with Sherry Lee Lincoln. Do check it out. That's it for today. Just one more week until we reach the election. Do keep listening, but first, have a lovely weekend. My thanks to Oliver Lachland and John Russo. This episode was produced by Mithili Rao. Sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. We'll be back on Monday.